6 years later. 3. The other students cleared out in the traditional 10th grade manner, as quickly as possible. They almost fully evacuated the room before the bell had stopped ringing, leaving only Maddie Banks sitting at her desk, facing Mrs. Hackett. Mrs. Hackett stared at Maddie, smiling. Maddie stared back with her eyes one-third closed and her mouth forming a straight line. Mrs. Hackett said,
"Matheson, I think you know why you're staying late."
"Because you asked me to."
"No, Matheson, because I told you to."
"I asked you to call me Maddie or Miss Banks."
"I told you to stay late, Matheson, because of your performance on the weekly quiz. Why did you answer every question with the phrase, 'I don't know'?"
Maddie shrugged. "I didn't know."
"Then why not at least guess?"
"Do you want your students to hide it from you when we're having difficulty? Wouldn't that make it harder for you to teach us?"
"Matheson, I think you pretended not to know any of the answers because you thought I intended to read all of your answers out to the whole class."
"And you did, just like you've done every Friday for the last 3 weeks."
"Yes, there's nothing wrong with your grasp of the calendar. Matheson, I use a student's paper to give the class the answers every week. Why shouldn't I use yours?"
"Again."
"What?"
"Why shouldn't you use mine again? You already used mine a bunch of times, like twice a month at least, and then for the last 3 weeks straight. I think the other students should get a chance, so I asked you to stop. You're supposed to be teaching the class about history, not about me."
"Asked? As I remember, you told me not to."
"No, I asked."
"You didn't say please."
"Really? That's the problem. You've been picking on me for the last 3 weeks because when I asked you to stop, I didn't ask nicely."
"When you demanded that I stop, you made it so that I had to continue, Matheson. I won't be controlled by my students."
"But if you have to do the opposite of what I ask, then I'm still controlling you. You've got to admit I have a point there."
"No, you don't."
Maddie laughed.
"You just did the opposite of what I said. That's funny."
"No, it isn't."
Maddie laughed again, harder.
"Look, I wasn't trying to control you. I asked you not to do something."
"And when I didn't comply, you deliberately got an F on your quiz. What do you think that proves?"
"You're my teacher. I'm not learning. What do you think that proves?"
"You're only hurting yourself."
"What else can I do? Give you what you want?"
"Yes, I'm your teacher. You should give me what I want."
"You don't give me what I want."
"Again, I'm the teacher. You're the student. It's not my job to give you what you want. It's my job to give you what you earn. If you work hard to give me what I want all year, at the end of the year, I'll probably give you what you want."
"I spend all year knuckling under to please you, and you might make it worthwhile? What kind of deal is that?"
"That's the deal we all get. That's how life works. Matheson, you need to learn your place."
"Oh, so that's what you're teaching me, my place. I thought you taught history, but you're instructing me in the importance of conformity and accepting authority. What an interesting thing to find out by failing a quiz about Nazi Germany."
Mrs. Hackett squinted at Maddie.
"The fact that you know how ironic that is just proves you've learned more from class this week than you're letting on."
Brewster and a petite blonde girl stood in the hallway. Brewster leaned against the door jamb, peering into the gymnasium at the girls' volleyball practice. Even though there were multiple games in progress, he only looked at one girl, with long black hair and laser-like focus on the game. The blonde girl standing next to Brewster said,
"I really enjoyed the monologue you did in drama class."
Brewster said,
"Thanks,"
without turning to look at her.
The way you mimed opening the door when you walked on stage, it was almost as if I could see the door.
Thanks, Abby. I practiced a lot.
How?
By opening doors?
Abby looked at Brewster, then into the gym, then back to Brewster.
You like volleyball?
Yeah.
Do you play?
No.
She looked into the gym again.
I'm gonna walk home now, I guess.
Brewster said,
cool. See you tomorrow.
Abby said, yeah.
See ya.
And walked away. In the gymnasium, the coach blew a whistle and all the games broke up. As the girls walked to the bleachers, Brewster shouted,
that was some great work, Lorraine! Really well volleyed!
The girl with the long black hair shouted,
thanks,
without turning to see who had addressed her. Brewster's phone vibrated in his pocket. He pulled it out and looked at his texts. He had one new message from Maddie, which read,
you're an idiot.
He quickly tapped out,
where are you?
Maddie said,
right behind you, idiot.
Brewster turned around and saw his twin sister standing a few feet behind him, putting her phone in her pocket.
How long have you been there?
Maddie shook her head, walked forward and put her arm around Brewster's shoulder, and shoved him away from the gym door and down the hall.
Too long. We're going home.
Brewster walked of his own accord, allowing Maddie to stop shoving him, but he glared at her as he relented.
I was watching volleyball practice.
Oh, I know. Why don't you just ask Lorraine out?
Do you think she'd say yes?
No, she doesn't like you in that way. I'm not sure she likes you in any way.
Well, she hasn't really given me a chance.
You should go ahead and ask. Then she'll say no and you can move on.
Move on to who?
How about Abby?
Yeah, I mean, she's cute, but I don't think I like her in that way.
Have you given her a chance?
Brewster said nothing. Maddie shook her head.
You're an idiot.
Both Brewster and Maddie heard the sound of heavy footsteps approaching quickly. They looked to see Dolan, a guy they'd both loathed since kindergarten, running down the hall toward them, hauling a musical instrument case the size of a piece of carry-on luggage, but with no wheels. He held the case out forward as if it were precious to him, or useful as a battering ram. Maddie and Brewster followed the other student's lead and stepped aside, so Dolan could pass unimpeded. As he ran by, he turned his head and looked at the twins.
What?
He panted, slowing his pace.
You dorks aren't wearing your special outfits today?
Dolan believed that insults counted as jokes, and that any emotional reaction was as good as a laugh. Two mistaken impressions that fed each other and resulted in his current, radiantly toxic personality. Maddie asked,
what are you talking about, Dolan?
Dolan smiled sickeningly.
After how you two were dressed yesterday, I figured you'd be all pimped out today, too. Did you lose your nerve or just come to your senses?
Brewster looked at Dolan as if he'd lost his mind.
We don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Dolan laughed once, mostly through his nose.
Sure you don't.
Maddie said,
go play your bassoon, Dolan.
Brewster and several other students laughed. Dolan thrust the oversized instrument case toward Maddie.
Don't bag on the bassoon just cause it's got a funny name. It's a serious instrument.
Brewster said,
it's a giant clarinet you play through a straw.
Dolan started stumbling away again.
Whatever! I gotta go. Late for practice.
All it's good for is making honking noises,
Maddie shouted after him.
You're playing a huge goose call, Dolan.
Brewster looked at his sister.
You're in a fine mood,
Maddie grunted.
Another run-in with Hackett?
Again, Maddie grunted.
What happened?
She held me after class.
Why?
I got an F on the weekly quiz.
An F?
An F.
How many questions did you get wrong?
All of them.
Brewster let out a long, impressed whistle.
And you call me an idiot.
Nothing says we can't both be idiots.
The twins walked home in sullen silence. Brewster, because he suspected his sister had been right when she called him an idiot, and Maddie, because she suspected she'd been wrong when she played dumb on her quiz. They entered the house through the front door to find Martin sitting in his recliner, reading. They exchanged warm but perfunctory greetings with him as they walked through on their way to the kitchen. Gwen sat in the dining room, large pieces of fabric spread out all over the table, hand-stitching two of the pieces with a magnifying visor lowered over her eyes. Without looking up from her sewing, she said,
"Hi, kids. How was school?"
Maddie and Brewster said, "Fine," accidentally speaking in unison. Gwen's head snapped up as if someone had poured ice water down her back.
"What's wrong?"
The twin said, "Nothing," again speaking in unison. Gwen put down her sewing.
"Seriously, what's wrong?"
Maddie said,
"We already told you nothing's wrong."
"I don't believe you."
"Me neither."
Martin had gotten up from his chair and stood behind the twins.
"There's always something wrong. It's when neither of you is willing to complain to us about it that we know there's real trouble."
Brewster and Maddie looked at each other. Then Maddie blurted,
"Brewster's into a girl's school who isn't interested in him."
Gwen said,
"Oh, honey, I'm sorry to hear that. It's just part of life, though."
Martin shrugged.
"Are you sure she's not interested? Some girls do play hard to get."
Gwen tried to hide a small smirk.
"Maybe,"
Brewster said.
Maddie said, "No, she's not interested at all."
Gwen said, "Well, sorry to say it, but a woman can always tell. If Maddie says she isn't interested, I believe her."
"What?"
Brewster sputtered. Martin clapped his hand on his son's shoulder.
"Yeah, I wouldn't argue with the ladies on this. Better to just cut your losses and look for someone new. And you should thank your sister. You feel bad right now, but she probably saved you a lot of time and heartache."
Maddie smiled beatifically at Brewster. Brewster said,
"Maddie got an F on a quiz today. She got every question wrong."
"Maddie,"
Gwen said,
"how did that happen? Did you study the wrong chapter or something? Do you need a tutor?"
"No, Mom. Relax, it's nothing like that. I flunked the test deliberately."
Martin and Gwen stared at their daughter, agape, for several seconds. Then Gwen said,
"She gets this from you."
Martin said,
"Oh, totally. You should talk to her about it."
"Agreed," Gwen said.
"Mom, Dad, it's not a big deal. The teacher's a jerk."
"So you're scuttling your own GPA?"
Gwen asked. Martin sat down at the table, shaking his head.
"Maybe if you do badly enough, you'll get summer school, and she could be your teacher for another 3 months. That'll show her."
"You guys aren't listening to me,"
Maddie said. From the living room, Philip said,
"She's right. You should give her a chance to fully explain herself."
Brewster and Maddie turned. Martin and Gwen stood up and craned their necks to see around their children. All of them saw Philip, standing in the middle of the living room, wearing a sky blue robe and matching pointed hat, and holding a staff made of gnarled wood with a vial of acrid-looking red fluid lashed to its top. Maddie looked at the front door, then squinted at Philip.
"Were you here the whole time?"
"No, I just got here."
"From where?" Brewster asked. "And why are you wearing a bathrobe?"
"And a dunce cap,"
Maddie added. Philip said,
"Good Lord, kids, you're bigger every time I see you. Look, sorry, but I don't have time to explain. I need to talk to your parents alone. It's very important, grown-up business."
Maddie and Brewster looked at Philip, confused. Then they looked at each other. They turned around and looked at Gwen and Martin, hoping to be reassured by their parents' steady nerves and command of the situation. Martin and Gwen looked deeply unsettled. Martin said,
"Kids, why don't you go to your rooms? Or the rec room, you know, away, and do..."
As he trailed off, he looked at Gwen.
"Something,"
Gwen said.
"Go to the rec room and do something. We need to talk with Philip."
Brewster and Maddie trudged down the stairs to the partially finished basement the family referred to as the rec room. As the door swung closed behind them, they heard Martin ask,
"Okay, what's the deal? You know better than to just appear in our home dressed like that."
The door clicked shut, closing out most of the sound. The rec room held Martin's surprisingly robust home theater setup, which Gwen only tolerated because of the heavily insulated door and soundproofing in the walls. None of the higher frequencies could get through, but the low tones carried. Maddie stayed on the top step with her ear pressed to the door, but didn't hear any better than Brewster, who was hovering two steps down. That didn't stop him from forcing his head around her to press his ear to the door as well. They heard Philip say,
"I know, I'm sorry, there's no time."
And their father replying,
"But the kids, Philip, they saw."
They didn't hear the next word because Gwen pulled the door open quickly, causing them both to fall on the floor at the top of the stairs. They gazed up at the faces of their angry parents, and Philip, looking panic-stricken and dressed in his bizarre costume. The three adults watched as Maddie and Brewster walked all the way down the stairs. Gwen said, "Soundproofing or not, I'll hear if you try to come up the stairs. Just stay down there while we talk." The twins stood at the foot of the stairs. The rec room looked the same as it always did. Fabric swatches and model kit parts covered the pool table. The big comfy sectional, covered with big comfy pillows and blankets, sat empty in front of the darkened projection screen. Completed model spaceships hung from the ceiling. Old movie posters hung on the walls, and on either side of the screen, next to large speakers, full-sized replicas of Darth Vader and Kylo Ren stood guard over a low cabinet, holding several gaming systems in varying degrees of obsolescence, and a DVR full of movies and TV shows. There was much for the kids to occupy themselves with in this room. The twins ignored all of it, instead straining to hear the conversation half a house away. They couldn't make out any words, just who was talking, and general attitudes. Gwen sounded irritated. Philip sounded apologetic. Martin sounded curious. Philip said several things in an increasingly fast and agitated voice, gaining volume as he spoke. Martin interrupted, but Philip talked over him. Gwen also attempted to cut in. They talked over each other until Martin shouted,
"You bring this to where our children live?"
The three of them fell silent for a few seconds, long enough for Brewster and Maddie to look at each other. Then Gwen and Martin shouted in obvious alarm, followed by anger. The shouting stopped abruptly, mid-word, falling to total silence. The twins stood still, listening for nearly 30 seconds. Maddie took the first step up the stairs, but stood there, not moving, waiting for their mother to open the door and tell her to step back down. When that didn't happen, she took the next step and again waited. After three halting steps, she crept the rest of the way up the stairs, Brewster following behind her. She turned the knob, and they both pushed the door open. The living room looked exactly as it had when they left it. Nothing was out of place. Their parents both looked angry. The only differences were that Philip was no longer there, and their parents were not moving.